Hello, this is Tom Scott with the Ford County Record, formerly the Paxton Record, for Thursday, November 30th, 2017. We begin our reading today with an article entitled, Paxton May Seek Attorney's Help to Resolve Landfill Dispute. Paxton. If the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency continues to insist that the city pursue additional measures to monitor the groundwater at its long-closed landfill, furthering what one alderman termed a pattern of harassment by the agency, city officials plan to enlist the services of an attorney specializing in environmental law in an attempt to resolve the situation. The landfill, located near the southwest corner of the Paxton Municipal Airport on Illinois 9, has been closed since 1991. Yet the IEPA has repeatedly denied the city's application for the site to be certified for completion of post-closure care, said City Engineer Mike Streff. Instead, the IEPA has been asking the city to do more monitoring of the site, which comes at a cost. When we respond to the reasons for the application being denied, then they come up with some additional reasons that weren't identified earlier, Streff said. After years of butting heads with the agency, Streff said the city is now being asked by the IEPA to install another groundwater monitoring well within 10 feet of an existing well at the landfill site. Streff said the additional well is being requested even though a hydrologist hired by the city and representatives of the Illinois State Geological Survey, and even some of the Illinois EPA field representatives, have said that the landfill does not appear to be contaminating the shallow groundwater there. The city is now being asked by the IEPA to complete four consecutive quarters of groundwater monitoring to establish background levels for the presence of heavy metals, even though, according to the Streff, the city already has 15 years' worth of data showing the background levels. Both requirements must be completed in order for the IEPA to certify the landfill as having completed its post-closure care period. Streff told the city during its November 14th meeting that he was in the process of responding to the IEPA on both points, and the agency will have 90 days to respond to the city once Streff's response is submitted. I am responding to the agency on why we don't need another shallow monitoring well 10 feet from the closest one, and also responding to them with regards to the additional monitoring they want the city to do. If the IEPA issues the certification, the city will no longer be required to monitor the landfill's groundwater. Aldermen, however, are not expecting a different result than the city has seen in the past three decades. We have been watching this go on for how many years, Alderman Rob Steiger asked rhetorically. I want to see it wind down. Over the last 12 or 15 years, the city was saying, we've got this done, we're done, we're done. So I'm just kind of thinking of ways to put it to bed. We're tired of being harassed, Alderman Rob Pacey said, because that, in reality, is what's happening. If city officials continue to not be satisfied with the progress that IEPA is being made, Steiger suggested the city consult an environmental attorney who has been retained by the city. City Attorney Mark Miller said the environmental attorney could review IEPA's mandates for the landfill site and any other information available in order to provide a legal opinion on how to move forward. The environmental attorney has indicated doing a nice once-over the whole thing would take her about 5 to 10 hours, which, at a pay rate of $350 per hour, would cost the city between $2,500 and $3,000, Miller said. If that's something that you're interested in doing, we can get it done, Miller said, or you can hold off until we're pushed into doing it. That's an option, too. Miller noted that if the city were to sell or lease the landfill site, it would be mandatory that the city have the environmental attorney involved. Streff suggested consulting the environmental attorney if, after submitting his response to the IEPA, the city is not satisfied with the IEPA's own response. In my opinion, I'd give them to the first of the year, Alderman Eric Evans said, if we haven't heard back by January 1st. Then let's get the attorney involved. I would be inclined to support that line of thinking, Pacey said. Our next story is headlined, Trio Faces Weapons Charges After Gun Fired Out of Car in Rantoul. Urbana. Two Lota men and one Rankin man were arrested on weapons charges following an incident Thanksgiving evening in rural Rantoul. Austin Matthew Flesner, 19, who listed an address at the 200 block of East Jackson Street, and Tristan Blake Zoller, 20, who lives in the 100 block of North Elm Street, both in Lota, were each charged Monday with felony reckless discharge of a firearm. Wyatt Henry Morris, 21, who listed an address in the 100 block of County Road 2700 East, Rankin, was charged Monday with felony aggravated unlawful use of a weapon. Bond for each of the three men was set at $15,000. According to a police report, Morris was driving an SUV north near the intersection of County Road 1700 East and 3200 North at 7:30 p.m. Thursday when the vehicle pulled a U-turn and traveled back to Rantoul. Flesner, the front seat passenger, was seen putting a firearm out of the window and firing one shot into the air. Rantoul Police and Champaign County Sheriff's Department stopped the vehicle. When the three men got out of the SUV, police found a spent shotgun shell at the feet of Zeller, who was the back seat passenger. Officers also recovered a firearm containing live ammunition. All three men are due back in court on December 12th for appearance of counsel. Now from Paxton, PBL Board hears construction update. Paxton. Members of the Paxton-Buckley-Lota School Board received an update on the Clara Peterson Elementary School renovation expansion project at their November 15th meeting. Chuck Reifsteck of the Reifsteck Reed, the Champaign-based architectural firm overseeing the project, told the board that his firm had completed 50% of the design plans and that 75% would be due the following Friday. Once the plans are complete, Gilbane Incorporated, a Chicago-based construction management firm, would follow with cost estimates. Reifsteck displayed several brick colors that would be included on the exterior of a 63,000-square-foot addition to the school's east side. Reifsteck said the ground floor of the addition would feature a similar brick color to that of the existing building to the west. The corners of the addition would have a dark brown color with a lighter color on the outside of the top floor. The new gymnasium would have a precast concrete exterior, which Reifsteck said is similar to PBL Junior High School's gymnasium. The entire interior of the building includes some unique feature. The cafeteria will have an open staircase connecting it to the second floor, and bleachers will be placed on part of the staircase, forming a location where assemblies could take place, according to Superintendent Cliff McClure. The building's new library would feature green and brown colored panels suspended from the ceiling to mimic a tree canopy. In addition, Reifsteck said, a rising curved wall in the middle of the floor space would make a quiet location for students to read their books. Brian Mrozak, project engineer for Gilbane, gave an update on the timeline for the project's completion. In the spring of 2018, Mrozak said, a gravel road would be placed along the perimeter of the new addition. Once the project is wrapped up, asphalt would be poured over the road for a permanent surface around the school. Other parts of the project this spring include a new playground on the south side of the school. A new staff parking lot is expected to be completed during the summer break near the current parking lot location on the southwest side of the building. On other issues, the board members approved two levy items as well during the November 15th meeting. The first was a lease levy resolution, which McClure said would allow the school district to purchase new technology, while the second was the proposed 2017 school levy. McClure said there's a 3.9% increase in the aggregate level levy and a 2.9% increase in the overall levy. However, McClure noted that the county's assessment went up substantially, causing an increase in the equalized assessed value, the EAV, of the district. Board member Steve Pacey of Paxton voted no on both measures, with all other board members approving the levy. I understand that the total levy is not going to be any different than last year, but I am not going to vote to extend a new tax, even though it's a small amount and the total levy is going to remain the same, Pacey said. McClure followed up Pacey's comments with a clarification about the levy amount. I decreased the rate in the other funds, so the actual rate is going to be lower than last year's, McClure said. The EAV has gone up, so there's more money that we will receive. In other business at the meeting, the board approved the following volunteer coaches: Ted Powers for PBL High School Boys Basketball and Colin Sullivan, Don Humes, and Jacob Myers for the PBL High School Wrestling. Pacey again voted no. The board heard from representatives of Aramark, the company that provides food services to the district. Meal participation has increased at the district over the last year, which employees have attributed to an expanded breakfast menu, specific food entree promotions, and an additional a la carte option. Overall, the district has seen a 6.3% participation increase through the first 2 months of the school year versus last year, while the breakfast program has seen a 3.5% increase. McClure said he has heard students say that they enjoy having more choices and that the school is working through the changes over in-house service last year. Currently, McClure said students have 3 choices of lunch at the district's 2 elementary schools and 6 at the junior and high school. McClure said the district has yet to receive a categorical payment from the state, but remains hopeful that one will arrive soon. PBL High School Principal Travis Dooley gave a presentation on course changes. Dooley said Parkland College has begun offering credit courses for juniors on campus through an early transfer program. Dooley mentioned that the computer course is being phased out and replaced with a computer concepts class that would be a single quarter class consisting of half keyboarding and half Microsoft Office-based applications. Dooley said some students do not have basic keyboarding skills and other knowledge of computer applications, hence the course change. 8th grade students would take a proficiency test, which, if passed, would allow them to bypass the course. Dooley also mentioned that he is switching from the Keystone online course to Edmentum for students taking credit recovery online. Dooley said Edmentum offers $77 per student for multiple courses that a student could take, while Keystone prices its options at $160 per course. PBL High School course Nancy Streetmatter said an SAT preparatory course is being considered for the spring semester before the juniors are required to take the nationwide exam. She said that the material would be taught on 12 Sundays beginning in January. Students who have taken courses in the past have seen a 90-point increase in their scores, she said. The cost is $180 per student, while she said the costs are $1,800 for personnel and $230 for materials. And Kevin Shebley addressed the board with a proposal to create a bass fishing team at PBL High School. Shebley said he has a son in 8th grade, and he said the team would be more like a club at the school, and it would meet on school grounds the majority of the time. The co-ed team would participate in area tournaments and could be entered into the Illinois High School Association state meet in the spring. The benefits, he said, are the education and application, student run and participation in various community activities, and he said scholarships are available. Shebley said he would need a faculty supervisor, meeting space, and volunteers with background checks provided by the district. And finally, Ford County Special Education Cooperative Director Jesse McFarling said an auditor found no major problems with the co-op's finances and that $14,000 in personal reimbursements were recently handed out. And an announcement from the Iroquois County Board. The Iroquois County Board to start meeting in the evening. Watsika. After years of holding its regular monthly meeting on Tuesday mornings, the Iroquois County Board will make a switch to evening meetings starting in January. Earlier this month, the board voted to begin holding its full board meetings at 6 p.m. on the second Tuesday of each month. Committee meetings will remain at their currently designated times. Board members supporting the move to night meetings were District 3 Board members Vance Lemile and Donna Crow, District 4 Board members Larry Hasbargen, Kevin Bolam, Sherry Johnson, and Kevin Kofnor, District 2 Board members Dan Persley and Jed Wetlow, and District 1 Board member Chad McGinnis. If you have been unable to participate in the past because no meetings were scheduled in the evening, now may be a good time to get involved, a news release from the board members said. The above-named board members supported the change and are willing to answer questions or otherwise discuss meeting and procedures or other matters of the county board with interested parties. Now from the Gibson City Council. No increase in Gibson City's tax levy. Gibson City. Gibson City Council members approved the city's 2017-2018 property tax levy during a short meeting Monday night. The levy, which was released in October, calls for $338,100 in property taxes to be collected next summer. The city's total budget is $8,050,718, with $7,712,618 coming from sources other than real estate taxes. Mayor Don Dickey said the levy remains unchanged from last year's amount. City Attorney Mark Miller said most area communities have raised theirs around 2% while adjusting for inflation. Miller said Gibson City is not adjusting for inflation, meaning the city's rate might be less than other communities. Dickey said he believes this was the third year in a row that the city has not increased its property tax rate. In other business at the meeting, council meeting members granted a request from Beverly Cole to remove a sycamore tree on city easement at 412 East 3rd Street. Cole, a Gibson City native, who recently returned to the community, purchased the Dick Walter property with the intention to live there. At an earlier street and alley committee meeting, members denied her request because the tree was not diseased. Cole appealed the decision at a later meeting, citing the heavy load of leaves and shedding bark. As part of the agreement, the tree will be removed at Cole's expense and replaced with a tree approved by City Superintendent Randy Stouffer. Alderman Doug Parsons said Cole intends to have the work completed by the spring, as she is remodeling the home before she moves in. The council approved a transmission easement for Ameren, Illinois, for city property located near the sewer plant. Stouffer said the city owns 20 acres south of the plant, which includes a high-power transmission line a half mile south of town. Last summer, Ameren installed new poles and requested a 50-foot easement in order to perform maintenance work. Miller said Ameren would pay the city $9,600 for the easement request. Stouffer said the acreage is used for farming and the city spreads sludge into the soil. Water plant operator Mark Webster was granted a $1 an hour pay increase upon completion of his Class 3 license earlier this month. Stouffer said Webster has one class to take before he is completely certified, adding that the pay increases are designed to limit potential turnover. Council members accepted Tim Milton's $1,377 bid for a city-owned truck that is in disrepair. And the council approved year-end bonuses of $75 for full-time employees and $40 for part-timers. Stouffer said the water tower painting project is complete and that pictures might be taken with a drone for a water tower contest. Alderman Susie Tongate said the new city app is running smoothly. So far, Tongate said the app has been downloaded 417 times, with 135 people registered as app users. And Tongate requested the city buy a $45 advertisement for a special newspaper section about the Gibson City Melvin Sibley High School football team, which won the Class 2A state championship last weekend. Council members gave a preliminary approval for that to occur. Now we'll turn to the obituaries. And since there was no reading last Friday, we'll do the obituaries from last week's paper as well as this week's. Sherry R. Collins, Gibson City. Sherry R. Collins, 60, of Gibson City, died at 12:30 p.m. Friday, November 17, 2017, at her home in Gibson City. Funeral services were held on Wednesday, November 22nd, at the Lamb Funeral Home in Gibson City. Burial followed in the Pine Ridge Cemetery in Loda. Memorials may be made to the family. Angela K. Angie, Deerwester, Gibson City. Angela K. Angie Deerwester, 63, of Gibson City, died at 6:10 p.m. Friday, November 17, 2017, at her home from natural causes. Her wish was to be cremated. A celebration of life party will be held at a future date. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to Compassion International, www.compassion.com. Barbara L. Hoover, Paxton. Barbara L. Hoover, 90, of Paxton, died Thursday, November 16, 2017, at Heartland Healthcare Center in Paxton, where she had been a resident a short time. A memorial service was held Monday, November 20th, at the First United Methodist Church in Paxton, with the Reverend John Houck officiating. Donations are suggested to the Paxton First United Methodist Church or Smile Train, P.O. Box 96231, Washington, D.C., 20090. Calvin R. Cal Kaufman, Cisna Park. Calvin R. Cal Kaufman, 94, of Cisna Park, died Monday, November 20th, 2017, at his home at Creekside Prairie in Cisna Park. Funeral services were held Saturday, November 25th, at the Grace Bible Church in Cisna Park, with the Reverend Terry Scheffer officiating. Burial followed in Cisna Park Cemetery, with graveside military rites conducted by the Cisna Park American Legion Post 527. Memorials may be made to the missions program of Grace Bible Church. Dorothy Elaine Davis, Gibson City. Dorothy Elaine Davis, 83, of Gibson City, formerly of Thawville, died at 2:36 a.m., Tuesday, November 28, 2017, at Presence Covenant Medical Center in Urbana. Her funeral service will be at 11 a.m., Tuesday, December 5th, at St. Peter Lutheran Church, 114 North McNeil Street, Thawville, with the Reverend Lynn A. Podle officiating. Burial will be in the Lyman Township Cemetery in Roberts. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m., Tuesday, December 5th, at the St. Peter Lutheran Church in Thawville. Memorials may be made to an organization of the donor's choice. Shirley A. James, Defiance, Ohio. Shirley A. James, 78, of Defiance, Ohio, sister of a Gibson City resident, died peacefully with her family at her side on Wednesday, November 29, 2017, at Brookview Healthcare Center in Defiance, Ohio, after a long battle with Parkinson's disease. A celebration of life service will be scheduled at a later date. Memorials are suggested to Heartland Hospice or the Parkinson's Foundation. Leo Pays, and that's spelled P-A-I-Z, Rantoul. Leo Pays, 23, of Rantoul, died on the afternoon of Tuesday, November 28, 2017, near Paxton. A funeral service will be at 6 p.m., Saturday, December 2nd, at Lux Memorial Chapel in Rantoul. Visitation will be from 4 to 6 p.m., Saturday, December 2nd, at Lux Memorial Chapel. Returning to the news, flag-raising ceremony set for Monday at Ford County Courthouse, Paxton. To kick off the state's 200th birthday celebration, local elected officials will hold a flag-raising ceremony at noon Monday, December 4th, in front of the Ford County Courthouse. Ford County Board Member Chase McCall of Gibson City will read a proclamation while an employee of the county raises the Illinois Bicentennial flag. Among other local officials who plan to be in attendance are Ford County Board Chairman Randy Bergner and Paxton Mayor Bill Ingold. Similar ceremonies will be held throughout the state. On December 3, 2018, the people of Illinois will celebrate the state's 200th birthday. The Bicentennial is a once-in-a-lifetime invitation to fall in love with the state of Illinois all over again, Bruce Rauner said in a letter to elected officials, encouraging them to hold flag-raising ceremonies over in their communities. It is an opportunity to celebrate all that has been great in our first 200 years and lay the foundation for 200 more years of growth and prosperity. Illinois is home, and the Bicentennial gives us a chance to reflect on what makes it great and how we can continue to make it great for our children and grandchildren. Rauner added that the flag-raising ceremonies will help kick off a year-long celebration that pays tribute to the people, places, and things that are being born, built, and grown here every single day. The Bicentennial will showcase Illinois' influence on American history and culture, achievement and invention, business and art. Together, we can inspire pride in Illinois and show the world what makes this state so great. The public is invited to attend the flag-raising ceremony, and the courthouse is located at 200 West State Street in Paxton. And finally, our first election story. Only one contest so far for the March election in Ford County. Paxton. As of Monday, the first day for candidates of established political parties to file their nomination papers for the March 20th primary election, only one contested race has taken shape. Cassie Schwartz of Roberts and Krisha Shoemaker of Paxton both filed their paperwork Monday morning to become Republican candidates for the Ford County Treasurer's post, a post held for the past 3 years by Penny Stevens, who is resigning effective December 31st. Because both filed at the same time, a lottery will be held to determine whose name appears first on the ballot. Since 2014, Schwartz has been employed as administrative assistant in the Ford County State's Attorney's Office. Previously, Schwartz worked as a probation officer in the Ford County Probation Office and worked as the department's office manager beginning in 2008. Prior to 2008, Schwartz was the treasurer of the nonprofit Thawville Community Nursery School. Shoemaker's background was not immediately available. Offices to be nominated in the primary election are those of county clerk, treasurer, and sheriff. County board seats, two from each of the three districts, will also be up for election. Precinct committeemen will be elected as well. Besides Schwartz and Shoemaker, filing as Republican candidates Monday were Mark Duran for sheriff, Amy Frederick for county clerk and recorder, Gene May for his seat on the county board representing District 1, Chase Call for District 3, McCall for re-election as Republican chair, precinct committeeman for District 4, Stephen Pacey for re-election as Republican precinct committee chairman representing Patton 1, Edward Homer for re-election as Democratic precinct committeeman for Rogers Township, and Theodore W. Conkling as Republican precinct committeeman for Mona Township. Besides May and McCall up for re-election on the county board are Dave Hastings in District 1, John Clark in District 2, Floyd Bud Otto Jr. in District 2, and Randy Berger in District 3. To appear on the ballot, candidates must file their nomination papers in the Ford County Clerk's Office by 5 p.m. Monday, December 4th. And that's all the time we have for today's reading of the Ford County Record. Just a reminder that this and all our weekly paper readings can be found on our website, www.will.illinois.edu/radio reader, or by Googling Illinois Radio Reader. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again very soon.